Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. We talked to two managers this week with nothing but praise for the role they play in non-league, but hitting the headlines, I guess, for slightly different reasons. First up, we talked to an old friend of the show, Neil Cugley. I think I describe him as a non-league show legend, a non-league legend indeed, and rightly so, for all he has achieved at Folkestone Invicta. After 26 years there as manager, he was due to step down at the end of the season, but he announced this week an early departure, leading to much regaling of his work. Yet, I wanted to get him on, not to blow smoke up his backside, but to get people to realise he's not leaving non-league, he's not even leaving Folkestone Invicta. He's just leaving the dugout so that he can focus on all his attentions on keeping his club afloat with his club director's hat on, the multiple battles being fought by his and other clubs on a daily basis across the country. It is also the FA Trophy first round this weekend. 32 ties, 64 clubs involved from Steps 3 and Steps 4. £3,000 in prize money for the winners, plus another £1,000 minimum in the next round, and a spot in the hat alongside the 48 sides from National South and National North. Our attentions this week are on the East Anglian Derby. Step 3 Leiston hosting Step 3 Wroxham, with plenty of friendly rivalry between the two. We speak with joint manager at Leiston, Chris Wigger, about his time as a player and manager at Wroxham and his friendship with current Wroxham boss Jordan Southgate. John Couch is on hand to help round up the week's news, including the managerial merry-go-round of non-league. So there's plenty to listen to. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's speak to my next guest. Now, my next guest, I can't remember how many times I've interviewed, how many times I've spoken to him. If you've seen the social media in the recent couple of days, you would have seen that everybody else thinks exactly the same as me. He's one of the nicest guys in non-league football. He's one of the... He's a legend of the game. I think I've been speaking about him as a legend of the game for the last 10 years. He's got plenty of years left in him yet. And just want to explain... My next guest, it's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Mr. Neil Cugley of Folkestone Invicta, because you are still at Folkestone Invicta, aren't you, Neil?
Yes, yeah, I haven't walked away from the club. It's just fine with trying to do everything else and the football. I just felt the football was starting to suffer a little bit, really, and I was going to pack up the end of the year anyway, and I just felt it was the right time now to be fair on the club, you know?
Yeah, I think it's, what is it, 26 years you've been there as the manager?
Yeah, quite a long time, isn't it? But yeah, it's been great, you know, loved every minute of it. Some ups and downs, as you do, met some great people, managed some excellent players, and yeah, it's been great, really enjoyed it.
So 26 years, over 1,300 games, and you say you were going to step away at the end of the year as manager, but you stepped away a little bit earlier, because you've got to concentrate on things off the field, really, because you've also, for a long time, also been a director of the club at Folkestone Invicta as well, and know all the ins and outs and all the problems that all the clubs up and down the country are facing. And you are the sort of man that, you know, football is one of the most important things in your life, but probably more important than football is your football club.
Yeah, it's true, really, yeah. It's been so much to me, and then... We're just going through a bit of a problem. We need to raise some money to get people involved in the club, and they're sort of people I know, my friends, and it's just taking up a bit more time than I thought, and I think I'm not concentrating enough on the football because I want to get this done as well before the end of the season, obviously, to get like a consortium in to run the club. You know, we're very lucky. We don't owe any money anywhere. You know, we're a well-run club, and just wanted to keep it going, not going, but go forward, you know.
Yeah, and again, that's another thing I wanted to get people to understand is that Folkestone is one of the best run clubs that I know. You know, I'm privileged to speak to chairmen and people up and down the country as to how their clubs are run. And I know that you're run without the oodles of that so many other clubs are on the precipice with. But even so, every week is different, every month is different, and it's still not easy to run a non-league football club.
No, I mean, I'm a great admirer of the non-league football. As you know, I've done it. Well, I've been involved in non-league football for, 50 years? I started when I was 16 and playing, and so 50 years of doing it. And I think, to be fair, that non-league is in a great position. I think some of the grounds now are great. The 3Gs are obviously excellent. People are putting in, and the people that are running the clubs are a lot better, I think. There's not this thing of, oh, I'm going to be in the Football League in 5 years and all that nonsense that used to always splash across the papers, isn't it? And I think non-league clubs are really well run. I've got very good people running them as well now.
I do think, you know, something that we try and talk about every week is that clubs need to be run of businesses. We love them because they're softer than the Premier League. They're accessible compared to the Premier League. But you still need to run it as a business. There still needs to be a thought process and a strategy behind it. And as you say, I think we are lucky that we've got some more business-focused people involved. But obviously, it doesn't matter. Best laid plans, as you know, as a manager, they can sometimes go awry.
Yeah, that's true. But I honestly say that I just think they're all run a lot better now. And you know, it's hard work. Yeah, it's hard work for everybody involved with these clubs. But, you know, what you mustn't do is go broke. And that's not fair on the fans. And how many clubs, you know, we all know about have had to change their names and become something else, you know what I mean? And that's wrong. It's not fair on the people that go and watch every week. And I as I said, I'll say that again, they're well run now, these clubs. And yes, they don't spend money they haven't got anymore and things like that. So I think non-league has improved, especially in Kent. It's tremendous, really, what some of these grounds look like and you know, everything about them.
But you've decided that you're going to step away. You've got some lads that come in, take over, and they're going to sort of accept your mantle. What are you going to do on a Saturday? Are they going to have to chain you up in the back of the change rooms? Or?
I know, I'll still go to watch. I'll still be involved. I'll still go to play games till the end of the season, definitely. But, you know, I'm 66 next month, and there's some sort of things you've got to try and do, and rather than just go home after you're lost and stare at the ceiling and wonder where you've gone wrong. And I just want to, there's other things I want to do, but that doesn't mean I won't be involved in Folkestone Football Club. I'll always, I think, be there at in some sort of capacity to help them raise money or hopefully improve.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're on social media. Have you seen some of the great praise? You know, everybody's been saying, what a great bloke you are. You're in one of those privileged positions. Normally you get that after you've gone. So, you know, I'd get out there and go and see what people are saying about you and maybe try and tap them up for some sponsorship as well.
Well, that's what, funny enough, I'm with somebody today and then obviously he's pledged some money towards me and things like that. So that's good, you know, so. Yeah, I'm not on social media, by the way. No, I'm not. So, I've had so many texts from different people, and they're very humbling, and I'm proud to get them. You know, it's a bit shocked, really. And so many people, some very famous people, and not so famous people, but they've been ever so nice, and really appreciate it.
And you think that's one of the best things about being involved in non-league football? It's the people from all walks of life that you become friends with.
Yeah, I've always said it's quite strange that, you know, say we go on a coach and we have with the players and that, all people, they've all got different jobs and all come from a different background, you know, so I like that mixture, you know, and that's where it's different. And you're not playing with people's livelihoods at non-league, are you? Not at my standards anyway, maybe conference, obviously, but, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's they don't play from us, they just go down the road and play with somebody else and you don't fall out with players, you know. I think, you know, I've been folks in all those years. I don't think I've fallen out with one player, you know. It's just, they've been all right, you know. And all the directors have been good, all the chairman have been good. So I've not had any rails or nothing, really.
It sounds a good time to step aside then. But in those 26 years...
yes, it does.
In those 26 years, how has being a manager changed?
Oh, it's gotten poor. It's different now. It's so different. I mean, it was... I've got to say, socially, it was absolutely brilliant when I first went into it, and as a player and as a manager. You know, the social side was something else, really, where that's sort of gone, but it's got, because the football's got so, not serious, I suppose it's serious, yeah, it's so important, a lot of money in it now, and it's changed like that. It has changed, but that's all credit to the players now as well, because they're so fit and so well-drilled, you know.
Yeah, so when you get your copy of the team sheet on Saturday then, do you just have to bite your tongue about, you know, who's playing and or maybe who you'll put in?
No, I'll just back whoever you know, obviously we've got the two lads that's going to do it now. I'll just back them 100%, because that's what you should do, shouldn't you? It's a hard job. It's a hard job being a football manager now, very stressful, and it can be difficult, you know, and I'll back them 100%.
Yeah, so is there anything else on your list then, Neil? You're going to be doing lots of stuff behind the scenes for Folkestone continued again, but is there anything else on this, like on your bucket list of things you should have been achieving on a Saturday afternoon?
I'll have to ask the wife that one, but she runs one of the bars upstairs, so she packs up at the end of the season as well, so she's done 10 years doing that job, so... Yeah, like little holidays and different things. Obviously, you are tired at, you know, with football. You know, it's every Tuesday and every Saturday. You know, it does stop you doing certain things. But I wouldn't have changed anything. I'm definitely not moaning about it.
Well, I don't think I've ever heard you moan at all, Neil. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to get you back on the non-league football show. I'm sure you won't be a stranger to folks in to non-league football. But just wanted to clarify the position that you're still involved. And going from superhero to an even bigger superhero to make sure that your club is still around in many years to come. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you very much. Okay, thanks very much.
So let's turn our attention to a side featuring in the first round proper of the FA Trophy this weekend, and a tie I immediately liked the look of when the draw was revealed. An East Anglian derby is never really about two local clubs because of the distance and the troublesome travel network, but Suffolk v Norfolk ties always have a little extra sparkle, especially if there are connections with personnel across the two clubs, as I'm sure my next guest will attest. So let's give a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show, joint manager at Leiston FC, Chris Wigger. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's good to get you on. I guess you are the man with the most knowledge of both camps. Weren't you even a Wroxham player for one time?
Yeah, I joined Wroxham when I was 19. I come out of the youth system at Norwich City. And my father-in-law, my current father-in-law at the time, was reserve team manager there. And he just said, look, just come and get involved, come and enjoy playing football again. And I shifted across and worked my way through the sides at Wroxham. And I ended up spending nearly 10 years there as a player. So I know a lot of the people that were there then. I mean, and I'm 45 now, so I joined when I was 19. So it's, you know, a little while ago then. But a lot of the people that were there at the time are still involved now. So, you know, it's a club that I do hold dear to my heart.
So when you saw this tie come out of the hat then, what are your initial thoughts?
Well, I didn't see it come out. So obviously, the draw's always made at 1 o'clock. And I know the Wroxham manager really well. He used to work with me. And at 1 minute past one, I'm sat at work. Didn't really clock the time, you know, that it was trophy draw time. I get a message come up. I'll see you soon, mate. And as soon as I saw that on the front of my phone, I realised that we'd drawn Wroxham. Had a little quick look on Twitter, realised it was correct, and here we are.
So how does that work then on Saturday? Is it that if you know each other and you know each other quite well, and you've grown up in football with each other as well, and you sort of, you know, how, I guess you probably know how each other like to play the game as well. Is it a battle of wits then on Saturday?
Yeah, I'd say it is. But you know what? That's a part of it that I enjoy. I'm sat here this morning. We spoke a little while ago. You know, I've got a day off today. I'm sat here watching Dorking Wanderers on YouTube, and I'm looking at how they set themselves up and how they play and the tactical side of the game. You know, like we talked a little while ago about once non-league football is in your blood, it is in your blood, and you kind of live it, and I do live it. So that's the part of it that I enjoy most. So going up against Geordie on Saturday. And a battle of wits and who can come out tactically on top is what excites me. You're dead right.
Yeah, and I love the fact that, as you say, you told me earlier, you actually got a day off from your day job, which I think is operations manager at Norwich City Community Foundation. So, you know, still football in your blood. But today, it's sort of non-leagues consumed you on your day off. For writing programme notes, speaking to me, you've got this interview with the local radio later on as well. And I guess you're trying to think of what team you're going to pick, what tactics, and even training, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's all in there. You know, squad goes out today. Obviously, we can have a little bit of a larger squad for FA Cup competitions. Luckily, our reserves aren't playing, so we can fill the bench and get some of the fringe players in, which is good from my point of view. So that's in the back of my mind. Spoken to the reserve manager this morning. He wants to train Saturday morning at the ground prior to the game. So I've got to work all of those dynamics into putting the squad out today. But yeah, this morning was program notes, and then a chat to you today, and then another one later on this afternoon. But you know, literally, it is that. And you know, we do joke about it, but it does consume you. But it is something that we fall in love with, and that becomes a way of life for us all. And without it, I think I'd be a little bit lost.
Indeed. You came to Leicester in March 2020, which historically will probably be remembered for COVID rather than the seismic shift that you had at the club. But what was it like coming to a new club at that time?
Well, it was literally the first time we met the players was the Saturday. We couldn't play football at the time, or there wasn't a fixture that weekend, I believe. We were then at the point of what was happening with COVID. So we met the players on the Saturday, we got together, we met them at the club, we had a little chat with them, and then myself and Darren felt it was right to just have individual one-to-ones with them. So we spent most of the afternoon over at Leicester. And then it was actually the next day on the Sunday that the government put the country into lockdown. So we then spent the next however many weeks or months, whatever it was, speaking to the boys on the telephone, making plans on Zoom calls, And trying to prepare a season and trying to perhaps attract some players to the club that we'd only really spent one day at before we were all kind of locked in our houses. So it was a difficult start. What it did do was it gave us some time to really think strategically about how we wanted to go about things, the type of players we wanted to attract, and have a look at what a three-year plan looked like for us. You know, the players that we'd attract in year one, how we'd make that shift in year two, and then get to a point to kind of where we are today in year three.
Yeah, and you came in, you mentioned Darren there, you know, as joint manager, but I'm not sure how many people know that you, as well as being joint managers, you're also brother-in-laws. So we all often talk about the dynamic of joint managers and how that works. I guess you two must really like each other, for starters, but you know, do you have different assets that you then sort of blend together to become one sort of superhuman manager?
Well, you know what, we do have, you know, we have these dynamics. He's a striker and I'm a defender, and we see the game from very different points of view. We share the same knowledge, and you know, we have the same background. We both came through the youth system at Norwich City, and that's where we met. We met as players there. He was lucky enough to have a bit of a better career than me. His you know, his went as far as it could go, really, and mine curtailed and went off into more of a non-league career. But that's actually allowed us to see both sides of the game. So it does give us a unique perspective. And when we put that together, you know, we do have a little bit of experience and understanding of both sides of the game, the professional side and the, you know, and the non-league sort of semi-pro side. So it does add a little bit. I'm not going to lie, in the dugout, as a manager, I've always really managed on my own. So this is the first time I've done it, you know, with someone alongside myself. And sometimes you need to make a decision. You need to act off the cuff, or you can feel something happening or a goal come in. Maybe you feel like you're going to concede and you need to make a change pretty quick. And sometimes having to have that discussion, I feel we need to do this. I feel this is coming. Sometimes that's difficult. So we do have to be close and we do have to be on the same page to make that work. But, you know, we've got to a point now where we do feel that we're getting progression and that relationship certainly does work.
Yeah, and you say you moved off into non-league, but you certainly, as a manager, you served your apprenticeship there. What, two promotions in three seasons at Sheringham Town? You know, you've learned the craft. You've now moved that on to the next level. Is there a marked difference from managing at Sheringham Town, though, to managing at Leicester? With you say you've got the experience of the pro game as well. How do players differ as you go down the steps?
I think the difference is the commitment. The boys that we're dealing with at Leighton at the moment, that they're very committed, that they're very athletic, that they know where they want to go. A lot of them want to try and prove themselves at this level or play higher, which they're the type of boys that you want to be involved with. When you go a little bit further down, and I've served my time at every level, and I've been lucky enough to win things wherever I've managed. You know, it started at Cromer Town, and then I went on to Wroxham, and Wroxham was step four at the time, and we were struggling with a smaller budget than most of the other sides in the Ryman North, as it was then. And then took on a bit of a project at Sheringham where we were again a bit further down, and we needed to gain ourselves some promotions, which we did. But yeah, you do notice the commitment of the players. I think that's obviously the main thing, that they understand the levels. And a lot of people ask me that. And I just think it's the fitness, the physicality, and the dedication that these players give to work in full-time jobs. You know, pretty much all of my players have full-time jobs, and they have to really look after themselves and give up time and dedicate themselves to playing this standard of football.
And I guess it's games like this weekend that give you maybe the opportunity to be in the shop window that's slightly different from normal. But you've had a great start to the season in the Southern Premier Central, currently second in the table after, what, a 5-1 win midweek against Rushden, a home draw last weekend, and a 7-1 away win the weekend before against Bromsgrove Sporting. Does this FA Trophy then come at possibly a bad time with your league form so great?
Well, it depends how we approach the game. If we try and do things any different, or if we try and look at it as a break or anything like that from you know, your bread and butter, which for me is the league, then maybe complacency can slip in. But we have a certain way of going about things, and that started from my time, you know, at Sheringham, where you start putting certain things in place. There's a certain way you do things. You know, we try not to differ from that. You know, we arrive at the same time every week. We give the boys the same amount of time in the dressing room, out of the dressing room. The warm-up starts at the same time. My team talk is at the same time. So you know, the footballers like continuity. They like doing the same thing. You know, they like repetitiveness. No different to managers having their own superstitions, and I'm no different to that. If I don't stop at the same garage on the way to a game and buy the same drink, you know, and do exactly the same things and go the same route, then I know I'm in trouble. And that's literally how I plan my Saturday. You know, stick to the routine.
Yeah, well, routines are great, I guess. You mentioned there that the league is the priority. What is an FA Trophy run still, though, something that the club would embrace and sort of, you know, you're never going to turn down success, I guess?
No, make no mistakes about it. The club has a certain expectation level of where we need to be in FA Cup competitions. We didn't go as far as we wanted to in the FA Cup, losing to close rivals Needham. And they had a number on the day, and they've gone on to have a really good run, and they found themselves in the first round proper, which, you know, that's me kicking myself that it's not us. But, you know, they've done fantastically, and I wish them all the luck. But, you know, come the other side of that, that means that there is a little bit more pressure on a trophy run, because, you know, look, let's not beat around the bush. Football clubs need budgets. We need our budget. I need to hit a certain target of funds raised, and that means getting through another couple of rounds. So that puts its own pressure on me as a manager. I understand that. I accept that. If I push the chairman to increase our budget and push it as far as we can, that's my job as a manager to ask questions of the chairman. And then in turn, I know that puts pressure on me to deliver something back. So I understand the way it works. I've been doing it long enough. You know, so but I relish that. You know, that adds a little bit more to it for Saturday. Yeah, it's a must win, and people look at it, and we'll look at our form, and we'll look at Wroxham's, and look at the step difference in between, and they'll say that we're the home side, and we should win it. And I expect that pressure, and I, like I said, I welcome it, but it doesn't mean for one second that I'll be complacent.
It's never been a football manager, is it? And I have to make mention of the incident of racial abuse at Tuesday night's game. The club's taking quick action in apologising and reiterating there's no place for that conduct within football. But I guess events like that, they sour the enjoyment for all of us, but it probably upsets the dressing room, even though the slur was aimed at the opposition as well. How do you sort of get the lads back focused on this game at the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to comment too much, but look, if you're asking a straight question, I'll give you a straight answer. It does affect things in the dressing room. I mean, firstly, I'd like to point out that we haven't fully identified yet whether that was aimed at one of our players or one of the Russian players. We do feel at the moment that it's leaning towards it was aimed at a Russian player, from what referees report or what referees said at the time. So we're waiting for that report to come in fully. We are looking at all angles of video evidence. We're lucky enough to have an excellent photographer at the games who has a goal cam behind each goal, and that has a microphone on it. So if anything can be picked up from that, then it certainly will be. We'll be looking at VO footage. It's really hard. We've tried zooming in onto that area of the ground. It's really difficult. You can't control what one silly individual is going to say. But what it did do was it marred a really good performance from the boys on Tuesday. And, you know, I myself and the lads walked off the pitch. I didn't obviously hear anything myself, but obviously the referee did hear something. We got in the dressing room, and I've never had to tell the boys to come on, look, put the music on, celebrate a win after a game because they felt flat. And that's what something like that does, and it's something that no one in football should be condoning, and I certainly don't, and I know that my football club doesn't.
Yeah, I think it's important to reiterate that it's for all of us involved in non-league to you know, call these people out. You know, at the moment we don't know where this comment came from, but if you do know, let people know. Let the right people know. Let's go through the right channels, and let's stop this at our level of the game and every level of society as well. Because it just sounds it for everybody, but we do all have a responsibility to deal with it. Chris, it sounds like then this weekend is a sort of bringing back, you know, old friends, old memories. What's going to be the result Saturday? Win, lose, or draw?
Well, the result for me, win, lose or draw, is make sure I give a warm welcome to anyone coming over from Loxton. The only result that will make me happy and send me home happy will be us in the hat for the next round. But I also appreciate that's going to be Geordie's aim, and that's what Geordie's going to be thinking as Loxton manager. So, like, you know, you go back to one of the first questions you asked me, if I see it as my wits against his. It's the team that I've assembled versus the team that he's assembled, and on the day he's going to come out on top. And we know that the cup games are an absolute leveller. You know, he's been messaging me a little while ago, you know, trying to put words into my mouth of what I'm going to say on the radio later, because he's on there later himself, live in the studio, and I'm pre-recorded. You know, so we're having a little bit of a backwards and forwards sort of conversation, you know, and I'm winding him up saying, you know, everyone loves an underdog story. So, you know, we both understand what's ahead of us. I understand the role that I play and that my team play, and I'll be making sure that we certainly don't underestimate the opposition.
Well, I really value your contributions. It's been great talking to you. Best of luck at the weekend, and we look forward to speaking to you again very soon on the Non-League Football Show.
No, definitely. I've loved the call, and definitely I'll come on any time for a chat.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Boto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made, because that's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
So time to head on over then to Non-League Paper Towers. Welcome back to the Non-League Show. Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Tim. Good afternoon.
It is a good afternoon. I can see the sun setting in the distant constant that I am. But I guess I'm looking forward. Well, don't worry, I'll be back in the cold and wet, you know, to watch the FA Trophy this weekend and to read my Non-League Paper on a Sunday morning. Probably in the cold and wet, and you know, having to make my own coffee rather than sat in some you know, sublime beach bar. But anyway, I guess this week, you know, lots of FA Cup previews are beginning this weekend. Busy, the FA Trophy Round 1 ties are being played this weekend, and I guess reaction to the FA Vase draw as well.
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, all three competitions are, as we know, well underway now, and they're getting to the point where the bigger boys are coming in, and it's some it's an intriguing draw. So the FA Vars threw up some interesting results in the first round last week. And, obviously, the draw for that was made this week, and we've been speaking to Hartbury University this week, who are in the draw for the first time, the Step 6 side. We've been talking to them, and they're obviously looking forward to their venture and in the trophy. We've got 32 ties this weekend, primarily the Step 3 and 4. Obviously Step 3 and 4, but they go head-to-head this weekend, and there's a few more really good ties taking place there, and then obviously the FA Cup, which is next weekend, and that promises to be an absolute cracker. And we've been continuing to talk to managers and players alike, or teams who are involved in that, and got some great material. So really looking forward to the next couple of weeks.
As a away from Northern League, I'm a Spurs fan as well, so there's plenty of re-education on the offside law over this week in relation to VAR and things like that. But what I love about non-league is that every day's a learning day as well. And mentioned about the FA Vars draw, there's obviously still one game still to be decided, of course, which is AFC Stoneham against Fisher FC. At the tie being replayed after Fisher won the penalty shootout last weekend 5-3, but it's been ordered to be replayed due to an incorrect application of the rules. Now, I wasn't even aware that the Simba was being applied to the FA Vars, but of course it is in play at step five and below. So Stoneham had a man sin binned, so temporarily sent off for 10 minutes in the 89th minute. So at the end of the game, it would appear that the ban was served, but he wasn't allowed to feature in the shootout by the referee. But on appeal by Stoneham, the FA have ruled that was wrong, and Fisher have to make the long journey south again this weekend to play Stoneham and replay that game. So many learnings.
Yes.
I hope lots of people will take from this.
That's right. I mean, it's been bizarre. In fact, there's been a few of these, actually, season or two. That one was an interesting one. Not seen that before. Obviously, the Simbin rule was quite a new one for all of us. So there was obviously some interpretations of the laws that we weren't aware of. We've also had instances about penalty shootouts. Mm. Are they to be taken or are they not to be taken, or do both teams have to agree and who take penalties, and can you move on a penalty? Yeah, can goalkeeper move? We've had plenty of them over the last few weeks, and I suppose it's evolution of the game, isn't it? You know, all of a sudden we're talking about sin bins in football, and obviously the FA Vars is the only major FA competition that encompasses those rules at the moment. And it's interesting that the referees have to dip into the rule book as well, and I'm sure 99% of the people who were in attendance for that game on last Saturday weren't aware of the rule. And credit to AFC Stoneham for flagging it up, and they got themselves a replay.
Yeah, and there's been lots of criticism that the referee and the official should have known the rules, and that's all great with hindsight. But again, even me as a lawyer that's taken on the FA over time in various guises as well, I think the law was written before all the changes that have happened, so it actually makes reference to extra time, in relation to sin bin terminology. So the referee, the FA have interpreted it in a practical mode, because if the person was in the sin bin during extra time, then at the extra time, then they were perfectly capable of them taking part in the penalty shootout. But obviously, in this case, there wasn't the extra time, but they should have been allowed to take part in the penalty shootout. And it is. It's all well and good. It's very easy to criticise. The rules weren't interpreted correctly. You should know the rules. Sometimes it's very difficult to write the rules before you've been in that scenario. And I don't know if everybody else's life is like mine, but it doesn't matter how far I plan ahead. Nothing ever goes to plan, and there's always a different scenario than you could have thought of would have turned out if you've planned your day out at 9 a.m. in the morning.
that's all right. I mean, if especially as rules are changing all the time, then as you say, there's different permutations to that rule. You know, with you play extra time, and Simbin obviously is a major new inclusion in the game now, and you know, so then you have to integrate that rule into the current rules that exist, and sometimes it can be complicated, and it can be, you know, there must be. These referees aren't professional referees. They're only volunteers much of the time. You know, doing it for love of the game, and a few quid to put in their petrol tank. But I mean, I've got every sympathy for them. As you say, you have to be, you know, to be on top of the rule book at that level when there's so many changes going on, and it must be impossible. Yeah, these guys have got. These guys have got their own jobs to do, you know, and families to look after as well, and you know, to be expected to keep abreast of everything that goes on. It's not always easy. So I've got sympathy for them. I think it was just an intriguing case this week, wasn't it? I think it's just something. I think you can blame on anyone. I think it's just the one of these things that happen in the evolution of the game, but yeah, certainly an interesting story, and you know, hopefully the replay doesn't go to penalties, because everyone will be getting the rule book out again next Saturday.
Yeah, I think that could be an interesting one. And, you know, I guess, you know, some of the other sort of comments on there is to, you know, the clubs are probably going to share a loss again on this game now because it's having to be replayed, so maybe they're. Yeah, we do need a central pot that maybe people can pull from. But, you know, again, with hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. But in relation to hindsight, we'll come on to some managerial moves this week. And as ever, they've been fast and furious. But it was nice to see Paul Barnes, old friend of the show, given the Dulwich Hamlet job permanently this week after a good interim spell. I think we spoke, or either I spoke with Matt, and it was a tough appointment because, you know, Paul, we've known Paul for a long while on this show, and his methods and how he likes to go about things just hasn't really had the success in the past as a manager where he, you know, maybe deserves so. But it does seem that he's been able to make things click enough to move forward at Dulwich Hamlet.
That's right. It was an interesting appointment. Yeah, very much. I mean, I must admit, it certainly raised my eyebrows. I mean, I don't know Paul personally, but I know of his work in the local area where I live, sort of Guildford Staines kind of area. I know he's been involved with both clubs there, and it's not quite worked out for him. So when he arrived at Dulwich, I was a little bit sceptical. You know, Dulwich, a big club playing playing at step two, but I know that everyone at Dulwich has got nothing but admiration for Paul Barnes. He's obviously worked there on a coach capacity, maybe with the youngsters, I'm not quite sure, but before. So he's obviously someone that they know very well and they trust, and he's gone in there and steadied the ship a little bit after a sticky start, and they're giving him the reins full time, and I say good luck to him. It's a tough job, especially at a club like Dulwich, which has got a very large expected fan base. So it's not going to be easy for him, but they're clearly comfortable with what he's doing there, and I'm sure he'll be enjoying life at Champion Hill.
Yeah, I'm not sure he'll be there as long as our earlier guest in the show, Neil Cugley at Folkestone Invicta. We spoke to him. that was big news this week, and I think it was important that we spoke to him just to get the full story. It doesn't really appear to be any more sinister than him trying to secure the future of the football club off the field, because he hasn't got enough time to do that and on the field. I think he's just sort of taken a step back just to give himself a little bit of a breathing space to make sure that he can do the important things for the club, which is getting the finances sorted.
Yeah, please. I mean, you talk about holidays. If there's anyone that needs a holiday, it's Neil Cugley. You know, 26 years in the same post. That's incredible. Not just this day and age, but at any time. You know, he goes down in the history books, and rightly so. I wasn't party to. To that interview, but I understand that he's he's done it for the benefit of the club and for the financial stability of the club, and also probably for a little bit of a breather after 26 years and a high octane job such as that. And I don't think anyone at Folkestone and Victor, or indeed non-league football, would deny him that. He's a true legend, a great servant of our game. And usually you see legends like that. I'm thinking of John Steele at the moment. You know, the legends such as that step aside, they usually end up coming back, don't they, at some point. And I would be surprised if we saw Neil Cuckley again, especially in the Folkestone dugout at some stage over the next couple of seasons.
It is one of those things that once you're a manager, certainly for that long, it's very difficult to give up. And I guess, you know, two big name departures again this week as well. I was a little surprised to see Peter Beadle depart at Yatetown. I know how, when he went in there, you know, he had great success at Hereford, and he was always looking for that next project to sort of take on. But when he got there at Yatetown, a great little setup, but it was left with the bare bones. And I think he struggled to build a new squad quickly enough to challenge as they did last season. So I guess that's the reason for his departure. Interesting to see, though, that his assistant Stuart Fleetwood has taken on the job in the interim. So it'll be interesting to see how Stuart, you know, again, a non-league legend on the field, how he copes in the field of management.
That's right. I've seen Stuart play many times, and I know, again, he's highly thought of in that local area. So they're obviously handing him down the manager's reins and giving him an opportunity, which is great. We love seeing a young manager is given an opportunity to shine. But I'm disappointed for Peter Beadle. Really nice guy and a great coach. Did wonders for Yatetown. You know, Yate are a team that they've always been scratching at the lower reaches of the table up until last season, when they had a storming season and flirted with playoffs for much of it, but they haven't quite gone their way this year yet. And they've obviously decided to make a change. But I mean, having his assistant take over gives the club a little bit of keeps the club stable as such, and hopefully Stuart can do a job and Yate can repeat the successes of last year.
Yeah, and the other big change coming down also in the West Country, at Yeovil Town, another manager departing. Chris Hargreaves, again, always had a tough challenge ahead there, but it just proved too tough.
Yeah, bit of a mess down at Yeovil, isn't it? Which has been a shame. It's really not been a good time for Chris Hargreaves. He's someone we know very well. He's a former non-league paper columnist, and we were delighted when he got that job. It was the perfect job for him. He's a local boy, and he was chomping at the bit to get his teeth into that. It's just not happened for him. I think there's two wins out of 15, and by all accounts, when they played at home to Aldershot, it was a bit of a crunch game on Tuesday night. By all accounts, they were poor again. So it didn't surprise me that they made the change. I suppose it's a good time to do it now, because Yeovil are now officially, I think, in a dogfight. It's going to be very tough to climb your way out of that league, where you really haven't got really no whipping boys in there this season. Every game is going to be very, very tough. And in order to get a run together, to get yourselves out of that bottom four, it's not going to be easy. So they made a change now. They decided to do it now. That gives them plenty of time to reshape. I understand Mark Cooper could be in the running for that, which I think would be a fantastic appointment if they could get Mark Cooper. I don't think it was any surprise that they had to do anything. But I do feel a bit sorry for Chris Hargreaves. I know he wasn't blessed with the biggest budget in the world to play with, and that's something that Yeovil fans, I know, have got a bit of a gripe against at the moment. But hopefully, if whoever does come in next, we'll get a fair opportunity to
to haul Yeovil out of that because they're a big club and they shouldn't really be playing in National League South.
And as you say, the table, there is becoming a bit of a dogfight down the bottom, but it is the fact that almost anybody in that division can beat anybody else. It's still fairly tight. You know, people have got wins under their belts. Plenty of draws. I don't seem to remember as many draws in previous seasons as we get in here. But you know, you say about budgets at the bottom of the table. There's some big names clubs down there that have got some decent budgets, and I think it you know, the opportunity's there for a new manager to come in, and if you can get the squad to gel correctly and just sort of get that camaraderie going again and that buy-in. And I appreciate there's other things going on at Yeovil that might make that difficult, but that what I would see is the way of lifting a club out of the dogfight at the bottom of the National League.
That's right. I mean, it's a very proud club. The club, they've got a very proud fan base, and it won't take a lot for them to to whip up the fans again and get that camaraderie back. You know, a couple of wins and all of a sudden things look a lot brighter. But as you say, it's different this year because it feels as though that every team we look at down there, you think they have positives going for them. I mean, you think, for them to get into it. Look at Torquay down there. I mean, can anyone really foresee Torquay United being bottom of the league coming in end of October? It's incredible, really. They're just every year there's always one or two teams, one, two, or even three teams. Anything? Oh, I think they're struggling this year. But this year, you look at the National League and you think, wow, who looks like a relegation side? And at the moment, there aren't many. And Yeovil, unfortunately, I've been sucked into that mould, I suppose, and they're going to need to work hard to get themselves out of it. Talk here, another one. Maidstone seem to be slipping down, which is a bit of a worry for Hakan Hereton. If you look beyond them, you don't really see many more firm relegation candidates. It's going to be very, very tough, as you say. There's more draws than I can remember. You're dead right. We do all the stats at the end at the end of the games on a Saturday evening, and never seen so many draws. And it's a very, very tight, very, very tough competitive league. And Yeovil will need to get the house in order to keep pace with the rest, I think.
Yeah, and as you're saying, we're Torquay down the bottom, and then maybe it will say so much about the division this weekend. We've got the National League leaders, Notts County, maintaining that 3-point lead at the top with their game this weekend against Torquay United, who are bottom. So first against bottom. And really, it might be first against bottom, but I wouldn't want to predict the result in that game.
No, that's right. It doesn't. If you just looked at that picture at the start of the season, you would never have had it down as a first against bottom fixture. But you wouldn't want to play Notts County at the moment, would you? I mean, smashing six past Wealdstone in midweek—that was a real statement. And they're just flying at the moment. And they did take foot off the pedal, didn't they, against Colville in the FA Cup. There was a lot of talk about why they made eight changes and they were punished in the end. But their league form has been phenomenal. And they host Torquay United on Saturday, as you say, and they'll be ultra confident. And I wouldn't like to be in Gary Johnson's shoes. But in the same breath, if they can go there and keep it tight and restrict Notts County somehow, maybe nick anything, and then you know what a fillip that will be for Torquay to move up. But as you say, National League games are very, very hard to predict this season. And although they start as firm favourites, I think the people who know the National League will say that it's not quite as easy as that.
Nothing's ever as easy as that in the National League. I guess one other big talking point, controversial point, was Paul Mullins' boots, Wrexham striker, shown on social media with an anti-government slur on them. And the club club were quick to say that they wouldn't be used in a game and it was an unauthorised post on social media and that sort of thing. And I've seen much criticism of the club for that because... Some people were suggesting this like restraint of trade, the player should be allowed his own opinion, that thing. But I have to say my viewpoint always is that once you adopt a club jersey, once you take the money to pay your wages, you also take on a level of responsibility as an ambassador and have to act within slightly tighter parameters than you would as a free agent.
Couldn't agree more. Once he wears that shirt and wears that club badge, then he's representing the club. And I think they're dead right. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall at Wrexham Football Club when that first appeared. I'm sure there was a few raised eyebrows and request to get a statement out quick as possible and kibosh the whole thing. They were certainly quick to do so, as you say, was Wednesday morning, I think it was, and it was. It almost sort of turned into a funny story, but obviously, with a very, very serious message behind it. Not quite sure how they managed to get that through with Paul Mullins' permission, but they did. And I think Wrexham were ultimately dead right to stand up for themselves and step in as they did. Especially this as a club, not in play in front of 10,000 fans every week, but also played now in front of a worldwide audience, and I think that would have been very much part of their thoughts as well. But no, I thought they were dead right to do what they did.
Yeah, and I think there's also the wider picture as well for non-league, because we talk about the FA Cup games that go now, as you say, we've got a worldwide audience for the Wrexham games, and I think it's important that non-league shown in the right in the right manner as well across the world, and you just need to have a thought about how it impacts on the rest of the non-league world as well. And it's great to have your opinions, and there's certain I think podiums where you can stand on and deal with that. But I think when we effectively start interfering with the game, and my thoughts on VAR and everything like that, we've got a very simple game, and if we try and overcomplicate it and sort of add different things to it, that's when we get problems.
Yeah, I mean, football and politics should never mix. That's an old adage, and I totally agree with. And I think it's all about professionalism. I'm not sure that would have happened this time next year, if Wrexham were playing in League Two. It makes you wonder, sort of, would it have got that far then? Whether they had the access to it, and would the thought even entered Paul Mullins' mind, or the minds of the agents, I suppose, out there who were sort of brokering this sponsorship deal. But ultimately no harm done. But but you're right. It certainly challenged the professionalism of the National League. But as I say, and that's another reason why I think Wrexham did the right thing, and not only for the sake of the club and the supporters, but I think non-league football as a whole, really, I think if it had been allowed to wear those boots, and it had been plastered all over media all over the world, then non-league football doesn't look very good, does it? So I think ultimately we have Wrexham to thank for that.
Well, thankfully, John, we've got some football to talk about and report on in this weekend's non-league paper. You've mentioned a few bits and pieces. Anything else in particular we should be looking out for in Sunday's non-league paper?
Well, we've got quite a tight edition this week, actually. So we need to try and cram in as much as we can. We've got a nice bit on Matt Badcock's done a nice bit on Neil Cugley, obviously. So, we'll be playing homage to him. Obviously, plenty more FA Cup previews. So I spoke to Chippenham Town manager Gary Horgan today. What a nice guy! And what a job he's done in the 6 months at Chippenham, getting the club into a playoff place against all odds, and then now into the FA Cup. And so he could be making history for the club for the second time in 6 months. I mean, what a start to managerial reign there. So yeah, we're looking forward to seeing them against Lincoln next Saturday, a game that was probably unlucky, I think, not to be considered for TV coverage. But they're not too downhearted about that. They've got the highlights program out there, and we got plenty of others, the ones that we didn't cover last week. Obviously, we'd love to have covered all the managers and all the big ties, but just simply couldn't put them on one paper. So we're going to stretch it over two, in fact over three, because the Sunday and the Monday games we're going to preview next week's as well. So this week's paper is all about previewing those games, and there's plenty of them and plenty to get your teeth into.
And ahead of the rest of the mainstream media, which will be clambering all over your stories come nearer the time of the FA Cup. But it's great that the non-league paper leads the way in coverage for the non-league game. John Couch, thank you once again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you. All the best to you.
And that is it for this week. Thanks, as ever, to all of my guests. Good luck to all those involved in the FA Trophy first round this weekend, including my own side. And finally, a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget to tell your friends, share the pod, let everybody know that every little helps. And of course, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL as well. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, GS7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.